Beyond the headlines. This is World Insight.
Hello and welcome to World Insight. I'm Tian Wei. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken will have a three-day visit to China starting April the 24th on Wednesday this week in Beijing. Up for discussion during the trip are a wide range of key issues, from managing the conflict between Russia and Ukraine and the Middle East to tensions in the Korean Peninsula, Taiwan Strait, and South China Sea. In June last year, the U.S. sought to resume normal communication with China through Blinken's trip to Beijing then. So how now, effectively, has Blinken's China visit been in taking both sides on the same page? How serious are China and the U.S. with joint efforts to de-escalate the tensions in the Middle East and beyond? Let's ask today's panelists. Joining us in Washington, Peter Kuznick, professor of history with American University. Also in Washington, D.C., Sura Gupta, who is a senior Asia-Pacific International Relations Policy Specialist with the Institute of China-American Studies. Last but not least, in Beijing, Rong Ying, senior research fellow from China Institute of International Studies. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Upcoming visit by the U.S. Secretary of State is one of a series of visits already taking place over the past few months. Of course, things are changing very fast, especially international landscape, with not only a Russian-Ukraine crisis, but also the issues in the Middle East. Now, Mr. Rong, what are the expectations from the Chinese side about topics to be discussed?
I think the Chinese side is very much, of course, sort of interested in or focusing on these overall principles that has whether they're being followed. I think the three overarching principles President Xi mentioned is peace, stability, and trust. But I think the most important thing for China is, of course, the question of Taiwan, as they are, we are expecting that the leader of the Taiwan region is taking over next month. And certainly, I think, again, in terms of the three key words, peace, stability, and trust, China would like United States to keep its words, translate its words into deeds in helping, I mean, in working together with China to ensure the question of Taiwan will be sort of managed in a way, right, contributing to the overall stability and the cooperation of the relationship, which is so important.
You know, Secretary of State, he is tasked with foreign affairs. When he came last time in, what was it, June or July? June, I think. At that point of time, the relationship was fairly poor. So he and his counterpart had to create the framework for a very broad overarching relationship. So they had to go across topics. But now there has been a lot of conversation on many, many tracks. So he doesn't have to talk AI. He doesn't have to talk many tariffs and those sort of issues. He's going to focus very much on those foreign policy issues. And there are a huge amount of issues. I mean, obviously, I think the most important ones are the burning issues. The burning issues are what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening in Ukraine, and in terms of the Swiss peace conference that the U.S. is trying to organize. What's happening also in North Korea, considering that Russia and DPRK have had a kind of a tightness in terms of their modus operandi. And so what the U.S. is trying to do is use China's influence in trying to rein in some of the behavior of these folks. But the question is, what is the U.S. offering China in return for that? And I don't think there's much. China has influence up to a point in many of these situations. But also at the same time, China is not out to spoil its relationships with friends and partners in the name of U.S. asks when the U.S. is not entirely serious on many of these peace fronts.
Professor Kuznick, over the weekend, we see some latest rhetorical, at least development from the G7 toward China and also the partners of China working on different fields. So how do you see the environment that is being created for any possible fruitful discussion between the U.S. Secretary of State and his Chinese counterparts?
I see signals going in two different directions right now. On the one hand, the U.S. has been ramping up its diplomatic relations with China. The countries are talking again, which they hadn't been for a while. There are military-to-military discussions. Our Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, has meeting with his counterpart, as well as the economic, Janet Yellen and Gina Raimondo, and Blinken's second visit, and Biden and Xi Jinping talking. So that seems to be moving in the direction of diplomacy. But at the same time, we see the opposite signs as the U.S. is strengthening all of its military alliances in the area. And the subtext of all of them is stopping China. What it says to me is that China remains the U.S. pacing threat, main competitor, and the real target. And the U.S. has gotten distracted in ways that it didn't anticipate with Ukraine and with Gaza and Iran. And it wants to tamp down those crises so it can focus its attention on what it considers the primary threat, and that's coming from China. And we see that in terms of the tensions building up in the South China Sea. We see that in terms of, my colleagues have said, with the situation developing over Taiwan. So we're at a precarious moment now where they've got three hotspots that could potentially turn into World War III.
Mr. Rong, let me go to you on that too, the mixed signals. So how do you read, how does Chinese side read these mixed signals and be able to identify immediate discussion goals vis-a-vis the long-term strategic nature between China and the United States?
That's a great question. I think the second part of your question, the strategic long-term issues, certainly the Chinese side are very much interested in. But taking into account of the difficulties and the nature of the relationship, I think China is clearly aware the sort of the difficulties or the sort of need and the time it would take to address these issues. That's why I think China has actually proposed that argument that after all, China and the United States are two largest countries. They will need to find a way to get along with each other. But this is, I think, a long-term strategic issue. On its agenda, there are some issues China would like to listen, would like to talk with the United States, with the Secretary of Blinken, face in face. The issues related to Taiwan, the issues related to, I think, the South China Sea, and others. And again, I think, keeping in mind, I think China following, understand that the politics in the United States, the different the debates, but the administration's positions, views, I think are also very much important that China is very much interested. And then the last point is, I think China would like to express its readiness and the willingness to work with the United States to see how they can find a way to address or looking for areas for cooperation while managing their differences. So it's a very, I think, comprehensive, indeed, I think, very important. That's why China is looking forward to that. China said welcomes the visit of Secretary Blinken.
Right. Another interesting thing, Mr. Gupta, is that we see this also fragmented arguments and views within economies such as G7, and certainly that includes the United States, of different sectors of the society having different views about what their nature of the relationship should be with China and what their immediate goals should be and the strategic common ground and differences would be. For example, we see recently with increasing interactions between the business, academic communities between China and the United States, well, the geopolitical and political relationship keep on being questioned. So this is also true and certainly to a very different degree between China and some of the major European countries that are members of the G7, for example. So how do you see the fragmented views inside this economy, including the US, regarding what to do with China, what should be the nature of relationship with China, and how to get this nature of relationship done, implemented?
You know, when Donald Trump and his administration declared that we are now back into great power rivalry in his national security strategy in December 2017, that didn't mean that there was a society-wide or a political consensus on that fact that we are in great power, we are great power rivals. And even if we are great power rivals, how does that great power rivalry play itself out? After all, this is not the Soviet Union. China and the US are the biggest traders in terms of their trade relationship. Yeah. That can't just be torn apart. And therefore, that question, there hasn't been an answer to that question. What we can say is that for 40 years, we had what was the normal in relations. We are seeing now a new normal being constructed. That's a process that's happening. There are buckets or baskets in which the relationship is very contentious in mil-mil, in technology, in trade. And there are baskets in which the relationship might be lukewarm or sometimes warm. Climate change is warm. Secretary Yellen went, if one reads, sees the readout, it's wide-ranging as to the depth of their conversation. And it wasn't just about sticks. There were a lot of carrots there. It was a broad conversation. So this new normal is being constructed one step at a time, and we won't know for even 5, maybe 10 years what that looks like. But that process is happening. And same for the Europeans. Think, you know, the Europeans, we've seen this in terms of the debate on de-risking and decoupling. To clarify, I think much of the US or part of the US, the important segments, who wants to de-Sinicize, I think that's the word that should be, while in Europe, they genuinely want to de-risk, which is to not reduce their exposure while trying maintaining deep ties. Right. So again, this is an ongoing process and we won't have an answer right now. And the goal is to deepen and entrench parts of the relationship that work so that they can be stabilizers for the comprehensive overall relationship.
Right. Recently, many have been reading the articles by Chinese and American scholars arguing for recoupling. Rather than decoupling or de-risking. So it seems that there is a variety of thoughts and ideas, and at different times these ideas will come out vis-a-vis the overall backdrop of how things are moving between the two countries and beyond.
Yeah, it is true. I think there are different views or different perceptions taking into account that the debates going on in the United States and also the sort of the mismatch or disparity of in terms of words and deeds naturally resulting in kind of question that whether the United States are seriously engaging China or just as a tactic to buy time or as a way to another way or smart way, I mean, with quote unquote, to suppress or contain China. But China, as far as I can see, has been very clear and consistent that the two countries, like the largest two countries, there are no way for them to sort of engage conflict or confrontation. And there's no way either that not to speak, not to communicate. So face-to-face communication is very much important. I think China loves to have this kind of conversation so that they can listen on the other side. And also, of course, China's views and argument are being heard and listened.
Let's go to some specific questions. Later weeks, it's going to be crucial in terms of seeing peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. Earlier, according to media reports, at least during the G7 meeting, we also heard from different stakeholders trying to urge a peace across the Strait, even though there are different views as to what peace means and how to get there. So, Mr. Rong, very briefly from you, if you are sitting there in the meeting with the U.S. Secretary of State about the Taiwan question, what do you think the Chinese side will bring up to the U.S. side, given the latter's impact and influence on the issue over the years?
If I were there, I would make very clear the tension or the problems we are having with the Taiwan authorities is primarily because I think the Taiwan independent forces represented by DPP. And more importantly, I think the United States, the positions on that. So if the United States really is seriously about peace and stability across the street and the region, it should fully implementing, fully following the words of not supporting Taiwan independence. Unfortunately, we have received a lot of mixed signal or opposite signal. For example, of course, this is a kind of bill passed by the Congress. But that if that bill passed by and passed and then signed by the administration, the Chinese side will regard it as just the right sort of thing that China, I mean, the real thing that China has very much concerned. So that is the issue, specific things China wants to. So words, but the most important thing is deeds, particularly on these issues like Taiwan that touch upon China's core interests.
Professor Kuznick.
It's clear one of Blinken's concerns in coming to Beijing is that they don't want any confrontation or issue or crisis before the election. They know that that would be very disruptive and very detrimental to Biden's chances for re-election. So I think the longer term risk is very, very great. The short term risk is probably not so strong right now.
Mr. Gupta.
If I was in that room, two things I would be saying. First, which has been repeated over and over again, but needs to be repeated, that Taiwan is the core of the core red lines, which must not be crossed. The second one I would say, and because it's a near-term one, I'm talking from the Chinese perspective out here, because it's a near-term one, it would be that the United States cannot write the speech for Lai Ching-te, but that the United States can make it clear that when Lai Ching-te gives his inauguration speech, he must speak in moderate tones, and that the United States' reputation should be put behind that pressure on Mr. Lai Ching-te. And I think that is an important ask from the Chinese side, and a good important near-term ask that they will likely make and should make.
South China Sea, Mr. Rong.
The current sort of tension or the escalation from Chinese perspective is because, again, the Philippines and, of course, the support of the United States. So again, so United States, if they seriously peace and stability, if they do not want the South China Sea, more tension, more escalation, it again can make very clear, because it is the Bongbong President Marcos sort of a position, change the positions by going back the positions that cause the tension. And what China is doing, I think, has exercised a lot of restraints and be reasonable as many as possible. The recent 3-point, I think, position regarding the Renai Jiao is very, I think, reasonable and helps, as far as I can see, a lot in managing the tension. But if the United States keeps sending wrong signal, and without, I think, taking into account the right and the wrong, then it could become very dangerous in a way that it may, cause a direct confrontation with China. That is, I think, not something neither side want to see.
Mr. Gupta.
2 points, again, to be made very clearly, and which should be obvious. On 2nd Thomas Scholl, there was an agreement between the Duterte administration and China. President Marcos has violated it and gone against that. The United States now at least publicly knows it. The United States should therefore not be aggravating the situation any further. I mean, there are solutions to 2nd Thomas Scholl which are not very difficult, but I don't think at this point of time, it's too early to talk about solutions per se to 2nd Thomas Scholl. It's about minimizing the tension. The other second point, which I think needs to be made, is a protest that needs to be made, a formal protest that needs to be made. In this Balikatan exercises, for the first time, a land-based medium-range ballistic missile system is going to be utilized. The U.S. opted out of the IRB, intermediate-range treaty on the European continent, to basically introduce it in the Asian continent, in the Indo-Pacific. That aggravates arms racing. And I think for the first time that it is happening, a strong formal protest must be made against that, considering that it has been done in the course of a South China Sea exercise.
The other important issues are more international, regional, and beyond. So one is the Middle East issues. We see Palestinian-Israeli conflict. We also see increasing tensions likely between Iran and Israel with the latest interactions, even though quite controlled. So how, Professor Kuznick, do you see those issues will be discussed given what Secretary Blinken wants and given what China's commitment have been and have always been over the decades toward the Palestinians and also toward China's partners in the region.
China, like most of the countries in the world, see what's going on in the Middle East as very, very dangerous, potentially explosive, and see the United States unflinching support for Netanyahu as the wrong approach at this point. The U.S. vote in the United Nations Security Council against the recognition of Palestine as a member state, and the U.S. policy overall, the latest aid bill that was just passed, which not only is in the Pacific, but also more military aid for Israel, as well as $60 billion for Ukraine, is part of the approach that the Chinese and others see as wrongheaded. The same kind of militarization that we see going on in the Pacific, we see going on globally at a time when there's very little diplomacy. China has called for diplomacy in all of these conflicts, but the United States has been pretty much deaf when it comes to this kind of diplomacy. Right. So I think China's criticism will again be very, very direct on the U.S. role in the Middle East, as well as the other crises.
Mr. Rong, on that.
On the Palestinian and Israel issues, of course, China is calling once again and again for the implementation of the UN resolution, Security Resolution 2726, that is the immediate ceasefire. And the question related to the Iran and Israel, again, I think China's course diplomatic sort of solutions. But what complicates, I think, China's position, as far as I can see, is that because the crisis was triggered by the bombing of Israel to the diplomatic facilities of Iran. And that, I think, at least in terms of public opinion, it raised the memory, the bad memory of Chinese embassy in Belgrade that have been. So it becomes a more complicated. China also have public opinion, and China very much, I think, also concerned about this, in addition to the principles and calling for the need for diplomacy.
Mr. Gupta, about the Russia-Ukraine crisis, we see the escalated rhetorics against Russia and possible more sanctions against Russia by the G7 earlier meeting. But at the same time, we also see that is likely to be a question about the Russian-Ukraine crisis that's likely to be raised by the U.S. Secretary of State to China during his visit in terms of China-Russia relationship. So your thoughts on that?
The United States' goal vis-a-vis China has been to co-opt China as part of its own policy, the United States' own policy vis-a-vis the Ukraine, or for the matter, the Middle East. But China's position has been very clear, simple, and principled. And that is, A, we should be having a permanent ceasefire yesterday. We need a ceasefire now, and a one which endures. That's number one. Secondly, if what the U.S. is asking for is a stepping stone to a broad-based consensual settlement or some sort of agreement, China will be supportive of that and will contribute to that and will help bring parties to the table with whom it has influence. But if the purpose of what the U.S. is doing is using diplomacy as a ruse to accrue advantage against a friend or a partner of China, a diplomatic advantage, it's not China's job to support the United States in that situation. And that is where it's trending in terms of Ukraine. The whole goal still of U.S. policy seems to be to isolate and marginalize the Russians, not bring the Russians to the table, not force and hammer a ceasefire, and find ways to then tamp this down and move forward diplomatically. And therefore, that limits what China is going to do or could do and is willing to do with this thing. So I think China will stick to those basic principles of peace and cooperation, but a broad-based settlement that has broad buy-in from all parties. Otherwise, China will be a bystander and the U.S. can go do what it wants to do, therefore.
Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining us. And that's all the time we have for today. I'm Tian Wei. On behalf of my team, thanks for being with us. Bye for now.